Good evening, Patriots. And it is Friday, November 11th, the end of 22-11-11, which seemed to have some of those people that believe in witchcraft all wigged out, but that's okay. They'll get over it. But tonight we're going to have a really special night. We've got just a few minutes here. We're going to have Pastor Brad Cummings live. He's going to be dialing in. And we're going to have a great chat about who knows what. If you know how he and I are, we're kind of like all over the place. And we are ready to take it on again tonight. So before we begin, make sure you've got a really good plan for your home. You've got your self-defense plan in place. And when those people come in trying to knock in your door, you got to be ready to show no mercy. You know how passionate I am about our Constitution and especially the Second Amendment, but just as passionate about being responsible and protecting my family. I discovered the perfect way to train with your firearm in the comfort of your own home and continue to improve your skills. It's called iTarget Pro, and this system is a game changer for me. All I did was download iTarget's proprietary app, load the laser bullet into my firearm, and start training. The system develops muscle memory, reaction speed, sight alignment, trigger control, and much more. Right now, save 10% plus get free shipping with the offer code BARDS, B-A-R-D-S, when you go to itargetpro.com. With the cost of ammo through the roof, this is the perfect solution for you. That's the letter itargetpro.com, itargetpro.com. The offer code is BARDS, B-A-R-D-S. This is something you definitely need. All right, Patriots, that's itargetpro.com. Get on over there and use your BARDS code, B-A-R-D-S. You're all good. Hey, before we begin, I just want to play a very sad story. It comes from the Babylon Bee. It's for those of us that are just so sad for the liberals. Oh, can we say? Did you know that every minute, up to 56 million liberals lose their blue checks on Twitter? And because they are unable or unwilling to pay $8 per month, they're without a blue check. You see, 3,000 liberals were rescued last year from losing their blue checks. But patriots, remember, there were others that helped came too late. And this is the story of those 56 million and those 3,000 and those cheap scumbags that don't want to pick out $8 a month for their blue check.
Hi. I'm Farrah McGrendelson. Will you be an angel for a helpless lib? Every day, innocent libs are ratioed, flamed, and even neglected. For just $8 a month, you can sponsor a liberal, providing them with a blue check, and more importantly, with hope. That's about the cost of one white chocolate low-whip almond milk latte light froth, or 1 gallon of gas. Call now. Your donation will provide identity verification, all the benefits of Twitter Blue, and a newfound sense of self-worth to a poor, needy lib. Plus, you'll receive a photo and regular updates from your sponsored lib. Everyone knows the only people worth listening to are blue checks. Don't let a lib become an absolute waste of a human being. Browse our database of needy libs today. Please act now, because due to inflation, $8 will soon be worth $4. And then you'll have to pay $16. Right now, there's a lib who's in need, and you can help. Don't wait. Every minute, more libs fade into obscurity. And even though they are definitively rich enough to pay it for themselves, their liberal worldview dictates that you should be the one to shoulder the burden. It's the compassionate thing to do.
I want it. I want it.
It's okay. Elon Musk can't get you here. You're going to stay verified.
Look at what you're doing to her, Elon.
Oh, yeah. My heart just bleeds. What can I say? The liberal class, it's almost criminal how easy it is to troll. I'm telling you right now. Well, Patriots, without further ado, we're actually going to talk about forgiveness tonight. I probably need a whole bunch after that one. Pastor Brad Cummings, are you on?
I am. I don't have a blue check. Oh my goodness. I don't even tweet.
Oh my goodness. I need to repent after that one. That was so good. It's just too much. the entitled class, I'll tell you right now. How are you?
I am very good, sir. I have a day of tractor plowing all planned tomorrow.
That's fantastic. And you have a tractor, I hope.
I have a tractor, and I'm going to plow it. And I'll think of how to get a liberal blue check.
Consider donating the $8. Well, Patriots, I was going to tell you, as I've told you many times, and Brad and I are great friends. And it's a really blessing to have a friend like this in my life. I speak that openly. And he and I have been talking for probably a couple weeks now on this whole topic of forgiveness, of justice, of accountability, and of love. And they're really kind of a four pillars thing that we've gone over, and there's been some heavy conversations, and there's been some other conversations. And tonight we're just going to have some fun having this conversation. Enjoy it, because it's really the Holy Spirit anyway. And the last time I checked, the Holy Spirit is not a depressing force.
No, you know, if we really, I don't think God has any depressed days.
I think you're right. That's it right there.
And you, I think one of the best understandings of depression that someone helped me understand was, it's anger turned inward.
Oh, that's good.
And it's so hard, because it's like, you know, when I was a lot younger, I was a very angry man, because I got my unfair dose of unfairness, if I might rightly say so. And so I had a hard time. I had a big justice meter, and it's like mine was pegged, and I was pissed. And it's like, I got confronted by the Lord on a number of different elements. One of them was, he says, like, hey, Brad, like, when are you ever going to forgive? And I mean, when God says it that way, and he puts the emphasis on ever, I thought he was a really good Christian guy. And I'm going like, did you have to say it like that? It's like, that's somewhat offensive. And I sat there, and it's like, I mean, how do you respond to that? You just go like, well, if you said it like that, that means I haven't. And so I kind of think that means I don't know how.
Well said.
Because it's like I thought I did. I mean, but it's like, God really wants it from the heart, not just from the gritting of your teeth. It can start there. I mean, because, you know, like when we face injustice, I don't know a single person on the planet says, oh, yes, can I have some more of that, please? I mean, nobody's asking for that.
No.
And all of us have our sense of what right and wrong is, even if it's miscalibrated. We all have a sense of it. And when it gets violated, that's really hard. I don't think anybody finds this, you know, easy. So I don't want to pretend like, oh, just forgive. It's like, no, it's like super hard to do it from the heart. But if I've learned anything, I kind of do forgiveness out of sort of like self-preservation. To be honest, it's like if the measure I use is going to be measured unto me, then the truth is I'm kind of aware of my need of forgiveness. You know, maybe there's some folks out there that are get like super awesome behavior all the time, never sin. As for me, I kind of am aware that I need some forgiveness pretty often. And if the measure I use gets, you know, measured unto me, I really have tipped my scale towards mercy. And I realize in situations, it's like, if God says, you know, if you don't forgive, and this is out of like Mark 11, 25 to 26, just if people want an address to just sort of look at, if we don't forgive, our Father in heaven will not forgive us. I don't want to experience that. I'm just self-preservation. I do not want to be in a spot where it says, well, Brad, I would have, but you wouldn't. And I'm going like, oh, so shoot. So if I want forgiveness, I cannot withhold it. And so I got to start there. But when God says, Brad, when are you ever going to forgive? I already knew that other verse. And I'm going like, well, I kind of thought I had.
Right.
And he gave me a picture of a whole bunch of people in prison, and they were in my heart. And I'm going like, dang. But I looked at some of them, I went, they deserve to be in there, Lord.
That's a whole bunch
just
of those.
Just being honest, Lord, you know that that guy should be in there. It's like, you remember what he did? And the Lord just handed me a key. And I knew I had the capacity to put it in the lock. And I'm kind of a visual guy, so I think that was a very kind thing, because I was getting all stuck in words. And he just, it's like I knew I had the capacity to put the key in the lock and I could twist it. And that for me is where forgiveness began. And I just kind of went, you know what, God, I don't know how all of this works. I don't have the words. I don't think I have the maturity, but I do have the want to do what's right inside. And he enabled me by just that picture starting there. And then I asked him, I said, God, because I think you do want it from the heart, please help me. And that began the journey of understanding that forgiveness isn't saying what any one of those people did was ever okay. It's just turning the situation over to the one righteous judge who knows all the facts of the case and will adjudicate it properly.
I think that's where,
and that's not me.
Right. And that's a really important point, because right in that place is where we have this whole issue of trust. So we really have to trust in God to understand that there is a much bigger play when we turn it over to him and what that justice looks like. Otherwise, we are constantly fighting and saying, we're literally saying this when we're not wanting to forgive. We're saying that I don't trust you. It's like, I can't forgive. And he's like, you have to forgive. It's, yeah, but I can't forgive because those people didn't do me right. And he's like, okay, then how can I adjudicate? How can I forgive you too? And we're not trusting in his process.
And I kind of, you know, it's like when you're dealing with something that's really unjust, with this just put significant, you know, consequences to what someone else did wrong, like a death, you know, harm, in permanent harm, all that kind of stuff, whether it's little or lot, it doesn't matter, because all of us get stuck in those places. When we hold on to unforgiveness, two things happen. We get in the way of real justice being done, because we're interfering in that space. We're saying, I'm going to be the judge, and I say no. God's actually given us keys to the kingdom, which is why I think he gave me a key. And whatever I bind on earth will also be bound in heaven. Whatever I loose is going to be loosed. And so there's the what I do with my dominion here on earth has an effect in the heavenly realm. And we're supposed to pray for God's will to be done the way it is in heaven and let it be manifest here on earth. And so when I retain someone else's sins, in a very real way, their life is impaired because I'm holding on to them. And now God has more than just that person to deal with. He now has to deal with me. And he's going to be a righteous judge. He's not going to say, well, you know, Brad's one of my favorites, so I'll make an excuse for him. No, he's going to be a righteous judge. And so when I hold on to unforgiveness, I'm inserting myself as an additional problem and an obstruction for God to bring resolution and justice to that situation. I don't think we understand that when we do that. The other thing is even worse, is when I choose to hold on in unforgiveness, I now open myself up to the enemy. He has a ground to attack me. And it's like, you know what? I don't need that either. So I've got a bunch of personal valid reasons for why I choose to forgive and turn the situation over to the righteous judge, because one, I want to be forgiven. Two, I don't want to interfere with actual justice being done. And three, I don't want to open myself up to the tormentors.
That's well said. Very well said. You know, one of the things about the key piece you brought up, and it's interesting because it says if we're, This reminds me of an episode in Star Trek years ago, and it was in one of the movies. And Kirk is being confronted with having to let go of his pain, and he's screaming. It's like, I'm not going to let go of my pain. It defines me, you know, and it's like that's part of who we are, what we become, I should say. Our pain, our anger, it becomes that easy crutch that defines us. And we think that if we don't let it go, that we lose who we are, not realizing that we're actually freeing ourselves completely.
See, that's really well said, and that's really important to grasp, because I think when we hold on to that unforgiveness, I'm locking myself in with my antagonizer, with the guy that did me wrong, and I'm allowing that situation to continue to do its work on me. And it's like, out of my own self-preservation, I'm going like, I don't want to keep getting beaten up by this. I don't want to keep rehearsing all of my wounds and hurts and letting them just get infected. And it's like, so, you know, I think that the biggest challenge is, if I don't know God very well, it's really hard to trust him.
Yep.
You know, we can pretend in a religious way, well, you know, his character demands that I try. Well, it's like, yeah, but the truth is, if you don't know him personally and intimately for yourself, then it really is hard to trust him. And I don't ding anybody for that. I just go like, you might just ask him to help you. You know, I think trust is not just so much something that God commands us. I think it's something he wins us to.
Well, that's well said.
And that's been I had a buddy that helped me a while back. He just said, hey, why don't you ask God to win you to that? And I went, that's a valid prayer. I didn't know you could pray it that way.
Hey, now, so that's something I want to jump on, because there is a lot of structure that we put on ourselves on what prayer should be and shouldn't be. We do this a lot. And we don't open ourselves up to just exploring that range of what prayer is, and the fact that that's part of a conversation we're having with him. And so I just kind of dig into that a little bit, because what you just said is so dead on, is you didn't know that you could put that in a prayer or pray that way or pray for that.
Yeah. I mean, I sort of figured, I always heard, you know, prayer as a demand, and I felt like I sucked at it. I mean, prayer and trust, you know, trust is kind of like, you know, asking someone to be 12 feet tall. Great if you are, but if you're not, it seems like it's impossible. And when I don't trust, it's because I'm not convinced that that person has my best interest at heart and will take care of me. And I think a lot of us have disappointments and wounds that we actually have with God. And if we're honest, we're disappointed in him because the thing I really wanted didn't happen. And we don't understand what to do about it. And because we're not supposed to be angry at God, because, of course, he didn't do anything wrong, then we get depressed because we just submarine our anger, and we don't know how to resolve it. And so, and then because I don't like him, I don't really spend time with him. And so I'm kind of stuck in my unresolved situation. And I'm going like, I think God is big enough for me to go have a nice little argument with him. And to be bold enough to just say, hey, I don't understand this. I had this moment with God one time. I said, God, your Bible says that you'll never leave me nor forsake me. Excuse me, my life experience, I don't think that's true. I feel left. I feel forsaken. I feel abandoned. I'm kind of going like, I got a good dozen moments where I'm really wondering, where the hell were you? And I had a real conversation with him. What was shocking to me is he actually answered. And he replayed those moments for me in my mind, and he showed me where he was. And I'm going like, no flipping way. I did not see you. I didn't know that. I had no idea that you protected me from that, which is why I knew I wasn't making this up, because I was mad at him. And I was pretty convinced he wasn't there. And he graciously answered the anger of my heart and showed me that I had that moment imprinted on me wrong. And what was so fantastic is now I look at those moments, I don't have the same emotions because I now have new information. I felt abandoned, and he showed me I wasn't. And so for anybody listening that is, it's like, have the courage to be honest with what you really feel. Don't shoot yourself. Don't pretend like you're supposed to be more developed in this than you are. If you're upset, you're angry, go have a really good conversation and work it out.
I fully agree with that. And that's the one thing I've shared on this channel a number of times. That is, if there's one thing that I kind of a relationship that I built early on with Father, it was just like, look, sometimes you're not going to like what I say, and it's going to be harsh and it's going to be brutal. But that's who I am, to hear me at times and hear me honestly. And I've never been rebuked. It's only gotten better. Just as I have been honest, he's probably tempered me a little bit. A little bit, you know.
Not quite as salty.
Not quite as salty maybe as I once was. But, you know, it's interesting because I think that there's a point in our lives where we think that we need anger. And we need to hang on to it as a lesson for our, as if we're going through a process. I personally believe this because I knew where I was at. And it was a thing of like, there's a visceral part of anger. And then there's a part that I learned that I was telling myself, well, you haven't finished healing yet. And it's like, that doesn't really add up, because literally we can heal instantaneously. Any of the lessons God needs to teach us can happen immediately. That's up to us, though, to be willing to let go. That's my experience.
Yeah, well said. Like I mentioned, I was an angry young man, and it felt good, honestly, to be angry. I sort of felt like, well, at least I have some kind of power in my being angry. But it scared my, at the time, fiance, you know, who's my wife now. She was like, woo, she was afraid of my temper. I used to, and it's like, I'm not some like super strong ox, but I was angry enough that I could pick up the front end of my car. Hmm. That's pretty good. I think that would make it to the strongman contest.
Or Transformers.
Yeah. And it's like, what's wrong with that? And at one point, the Lord finally kind of said, hey, let's deal with your anger. And I'm going like, okay, let's do that. I don't know how to do that. I'm angry. It's like, you know, I can wear it as a badge. And he hit me with this convicting arrow. He said, your anger shows who you serve.
That's a good one, because that's a really mixed bag, right?
Oh my gosh. I sat there and I kind of went, okay. He didn't give me a chapter and verse, and I don't have a chapter and verse for it. It just was true. And I sat there going like, if your anger shows who you serve, I thought about all the things that I'm angry, and I kind of went, oh no. Very few of these are about the righteous indignation that I feel for the kingdom of God.
That's
most
good.
Most of them are, I didn't get what I wanted.
Right.
And I kind of went, okay, ergo, if my anger shows who I serve, then I'm serving myself in most all of this anger. God opposes the proud. He gives grace to the humble. Uh-oh. I'm on the wrong side of this. And I just went, wow. But I had the presence of mind to say, well, guess what, God? I haven't the foggiest clue what to do. I have had this with me for quite some time, and none of these situations are resolved in a way that I would like, so I'm angry. I went to bed that night, and what was interesting is I woke up halfway through the night on the other side of the room, and I was experiencing some malevolent force, and I was being in the throes of being delivered. The Lord had the presence of mind to start it in my sleep where I wouldn't interfere. And then he woke me up to ask me if I wanted him to continue. And what do you mean? I got a demon? And it's like, yes, you do. And I'm going like, oh, wow. Don't have theology for that. But since I didn't know how I got to the other side of the room, and now I'm awake, and I'm not a sleepwalker, I said, well, Lord, you got me here. You know how to finish it. Please do.
Good. Good call.
And I don't remember exactly what happened other than I woke up several hours later in bed. And when my wife looked at me, she says, "You're different." And I was like, "Yeah, I feel like 1,000 pounds lighter." And she says, "Your face is different. What happened?" And I told her what happened that night, that, you know, in the middle of it, I was getting set free from a demonic spirit of rage. That's how I used to pick up the front end of my car. I called it frustration. The Lord called it rage. And I kind of went, "Oh, wow." So I have nothing but joy in sharing that, because it's like, guess what? God really freed me. That was my first ever experience of deliverance. And it's been the recipient of God's freeing hand. But it began with his confronting me, convicting me, and me owning it. And without having the knowledge of how to get from A to free, he did that. And it's like, wow, thank you, Father. You released me from my tormentor.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. We have a real challenge right now, I think, in our culture. And that is that we are faced with high levels of rage and anger based on the current situation. We've got, obviously, the vax and those people that have delivered that mechanism. And we have an injustice with this election that's happening everywhere. And there's no justice.
This is
a clown show we're watching. And there really is no justice in this land at this point in time. So there is a difficulty in channeling where and trusting and understanding what justice is. And then there's this line of understanding that, of believing that forgiveness isn't excusing the crime.
Right.
And this is a problem. And so there is a disempowerment that has been very strategically put in play here, because our courts are all rigged. And so they're taking away the justice on the earth, which is what people want to see. And that gives a crutch for anger, quite frankly, and a housing for anger. And then anger. And then I think what we tend to do with that is we go further, because I think what we tend to do on top of that is, not being able to identify what to do with the anger, we then convert the title and we call it right.
J&M Jewelry provides online jewelry appraisals that are convenient, secure, and affordable. Appraisals are usually completed within 48 hours and sent directly to your email. Contact us today or visit our website to use our appraisal request form. J&MJewelry.com.
This was made possible by Brighteon.com. After being deplatformed by YouTube, I built Brighteon.com so that we can speak. All voices of dissent are welcome. Join Brighteon.com now. Post your videos today and start building an audience there where you will not be censored. Brighteon.com.
The Kelly Key easily converts your AR rifle to bolt action, allowing you to keep the rifle you love in assault weapon jurisdictions. The Kelly Key is a true fast drop-in solution. No permanent changes to your rifle. Import, transport, own, and have fun with your AR. Why the Kelly Key? Because a bolt action is not an assault weapon. Stay future ready from gun bans with the Kelly Key. The Kelly Key also lets you quickly and easily build your ideal hunting rifle, lets you build the quietest suppressed rifle, and benefits your long-range precision shooting. Available now at KellyKey.com with free shipping.
The world we once knew is collapsing. We're being warned to expect rolling blackouts, and our political leaders are deliberately shutting down pipelines, fuel refineries, nuclear power plants, and energy exploration. The currency is collapsing, while financial assets are plummeting in value, and the global food supply is being deliberately decimated. To survive this war being waged on humanity, you need more than just regular prepping. You need resilient prepping. And that's the title of my new free audiobook, Resilient Prepping. You can download the entire audiobook and a printable PDF transcript for free right now at resilientprepping.com. Resilient Prepping teaches practical strategies for prepping in three layers: high tech, low tech, and no tech. Resilient Prepping is your ultimate guide to surviving the total collapse of the world as we know it, because that's exactly what globalists are trying to achieve. Download this entire audiobook for free right now at resilientprepping.com. Nearly all the vitamin C sold at retail today comes from China, and it's made from genetically modified corn. Even though vitamin C is a critical part of immune support, it's also critical to know where your vitamin C comes from. I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Brighteon and BrighteonStore.com, and we only sell non-China, non-GMO vitamin C. We then subject it to rigorous laboratory testing in our own food science lab, checking for heavy metals, glyphosate, as well as microbiological contamination. Only after it passes our tests do we encapsulate it and package it for our audience. You can find it at BrighteonStore.com. It's not the cheapest vitamin C on the market, but it is by far the most rigorously tested and honestly sourced vitamin C available anywhere in the world. Support your health and this free speech platform by shopping at BrighteonStore.com.
I feel that Juvent is helping me to get better every day in every way.
That impact is what has been shown to help improve your bone density. Without that impact, you're missing a very important nutrient in your physical conditioning program.
The Juvent Micro Impact System allows the person to create more joint range of motion. Now I know there's a chance that nourishment can take place to that joint.
Get one of these.
SAT123.com, they have put together a really incredible package: emergency backup communication systems, power systems. We've got sat phones, we've got solar panels, and also the big 400 watt solar panel behind us there. And why does this matter? Because, of course, right now we are dealing with massive risk of blackouts, and the power grid is just failing, you know, intermittently, but it's going to get worse because we've also got energy shortages. Think about the lack of coal power, the diesel problems that are happening right now. If you're in the military or the National Guard or Border Patrol or law enforcement, and you need to be able to function even when the power grid goes down, or maybe you're a first responder, rescue team, firefighter, paramedic, you name it, you need to know about this equipment. So SAT123.com, folks.
Capital Punishment shows the world the true story of January 6, 2021. The event was years in the making, and the threat to the survival of America as we know it has never been greater. Not only is this film a must-see, but it's already one of the most censored films of all time. Just visit HisGlory.tv today to get your copy. Capital Punishment, everything they told you was a lie.
Mike Adams here with an operator, a deployment leader on the Texas southern border, who's been using these satellite-based bivy sticks for very effective communications. And he's here just give us a few words about how these bivy sticks are operating, how it's helping he and his team members. And remember, these are available through the satellite phone store, sat123.com. It's satellite-based text messaging, works when no cell towers work or aren't reachable.
We use these to communicate GPS cords to when we are seeing drug runners or people carrying stuff. We've had, you know, bust up to 13,600 pounds worth of marijuana and fentanyl that we have been on operations with in conjunction with federal agents and supporting them in their operations.
So they are pro-America and pro-humanitarian in helping to keep our country and our community safe. Everybody, God bless America. Take care.
Leave your sacrifice there. Go set it right with your brother. Then come back. Because he's really not interested in my little religious sacrifice, so long as I'm harboring anger, wrath, and unrighteousness in my heart. And it's like, get right with your, with who you're wroth with. And then the without doubting, that's like, that's when James says, you know, any man who comes to God needs to know that he exists and that he's a rewarder of those that, that diligently, not the one and done, diligently seek him, and that he is going to give generously to all who ask. You know, if I'm needing wisdom, he's going to answer that. But I've got to stay persistent in that place of being able to receive and connect with him. And I think a lot of us just leave way too quick. And so when Paul is saying, I want you to, without wrath and without doubting, those are two things I need to deal with as I come to the place of prayer. And if I need God's help, he'll help me with those. But I do have to deal with those. Then if I have, then my prayers will probably hit the mark and be far more effectual because I'm not tripping them up.
This is a, yeah, this is, these are difficult concepts in a time when we have so much damage that has been done. And it's, you know, and this again, like you said, and I've said this a number of times, it is normal to be angry and frustrated right now. Absolutely. I mean, and we
if you're not, something's wrong with you.
There, that's well said.
You're not seeing it correctly.
Right. The thing is, you know, it's great because today I talked to one of my buddies from Special Forces and Delta and literally put these questions to him. And it was like, okay, I want to hear from your point of view as an operator who has kicked in doors and done the deed right there and taken them out. That was in your operation. Tell me about the presence of mind and the state of your heart as you're doing these. And it's the same thing. It's like, these are missions. You cannot have vengeance in your heart. You have to have a clean heart going into this. It has to be pure because you have to be able to see clearly. If you're running with rage, if you're running,
it's murder, not the sword of justice.
Correct, because they're the deliverers of justice. They're not the deliverers. You're going to hear all the euphemisms of like, you know, vengeance and all this stuff. But in truth, when they operate, and I know this from working with them, it's a clear path to where the team relies on everybody having a clear head. Vengeance, extreme anger without righteousness that they work with. If you don't have righteousness and you're working with anger, it blinds you.
Yeah.
I'll give you a real story of just accountability on this. This is just a good friend of mine, one of the legends in the Delta community, was actually doing an operation, and they were in Iraq, and understand this, there's a thing called an ND, which is a negligent discharge. And in Delta, if you have a negligent discharge, meaning it was accidental, you're immediately suspended from the team. And that suspension can be, and that's one air. Okay, this is the type of world that we're talking about here in special operations. One ND, you're immediately suspended from the team. And that suspension could be permanent, but at the very least, you're going to have to go through remedial training, like extensive time on the range to work out the problem. Okay? So here's, you're dealing with extreme accountability on this whole thing and this story. And it's really amazing to kind of give you the ethics of how this works. This person was on point. They're coming into the room. They made a turn to go upstairs. And a guy came rushing downstairs. And this, my buddy, drew and shot and killed the guy coming at him. When he got back, the team complimented him on like team members were like, dude, that was one of the best shots we've ever seen you make. And he says, I'm putting myself on suspension. And they said, what are you talking about? He said, this is why. I reacted and I didn't see the target. I just spontaneously drew and shot. He said, that's not how we do things. It could have been somebody else coming down that stairs.
Wow.
And literally put himself on personal suspension. See, we don't live in that level of accountability. And if we did, these issues of forgiveness, these issues of having an unburdened heart, these ideas of getting vengeance out of our heart would be very simple if our life lived in that level of accountability.
Yeah. I mean, if we understood the demonic realm and the biggest entrance of the enemy's attack in my life is called the doorway of unforgiveness, the incentive to hold on to, you know, someone else's sins, it, for me, it just goes right out the door. I have dealt with so many deliverance moments were the primary thing that allowed this person's life to be infiltrated and attacked was the unforgiveness that they were holding on to. So for me, I've got a great experience under my life that just says, this is not helpful to you. And so it's the one thing I've taught all of my kids to just go like, hey, we don't go to bed angry. And why? Well, because the Bible says, be angry and sin not. Do not let the sun go down on your anger. Why? So as to not give the devil a foothold.
Yeah,
a topos, a place to stand. And it's like, I don't want the devil. It's like, it anger is not a sin. But how I deal with it will either be productive or destructive. And I've got to figure out how to process those things that bug me. And the best way to do it is to actually have real conversations, not pretend ones, but full-on emotions brought to the surface and say, hey, God, this is what's going on in me. I'm ticked. I'm mad. And what are you mad at? I'm mad about this. And to say it out loud, bring it to him. I'll guarantee you, God is not going to be absent from that. He's a phenomenal communicator. I don't care if you don't know how to hear. He does know how to speak. He will get through to the honest heart. Honestly,
yeah.
He will get through to you if you're really coming to him. You think God's going to miss that moment? He's waiting for that. He will be all over that in spades if you'll simply have the courage to be honest about it. I think most of us pretend that we're okay.
Yeah.
If not. Well, and I just learned to say, I'm not pretending anymore. That's stupid. I am going to be, balls to the wall. This is what I feel. I'm mad. I'm ticked. I could be wrong. Please rebuke me. I don't know how well I'll do if you do, but I'll deal with it then. Because I'm not a very good judge of my own heart. I need the Holy Spirit to come in and sort things out. He's great at convicting me. The enemy's nasty in terms of condemning me, but I know when I feel condemned, that's not the Lord. The Lord comes in and fingers things, but he doesn't leave me there. He shows me what to do. That's how I know it's him.
Yeah, that's really well said, Brad. I mean, we're at a really interesting point right now, and I think that I've told you, we've talked a lot in the last couple of weeks about this, and it's really been on my heart to talk a lot about these issues of the forgiveness, the anger, defining anger too, and separating it between anger and righteousness, looking at vengeance, that corruption of vengeance, and then that place of love, which is extremely powerful, and of course not the corporal love that we're so, that love always, that word always conjures in our head. But I think what people are also not, I won't say broadly, but I think a lot of people say it this way, are not realizing is what we kind of where we started a bit ago, which is that our courts are bankrupt. They are non-functional, which means that the onus for justice is going to be falling on us. And that's coming. I don't know what form it's going to take, but I guarantee that's coming. And as that comes, the question is, what are we going to become? Because this is the crucible for our nation right now. If we're going to let our justice be led by hearts of vengeance, we are going to become worse.
Welcome to the French Revolution, baby.
Yeah, there, well said. It's literally guillotines out and everybody having a bloodbath, and then you have it goes on forever. Or we get to this place where we are at a moment where we say, okay, forgiveness is, we're going to give the forgiveness of the heart, but we're going to pursue justice ruthlessly without the vengeance, and it's a clean heart.
Well, I think the reality is when the human system is broken, which ours very clearly is. I mean, we do not have courts of justice anymore. We just have courts. And then the spoils go to those who lawyer well and pay lots of money. And it's not right. And it's very rigged, and it's not in your favor, it's not in my favor, and nobody's sitting there to make sure that things are done right. It's like people get away with all kinds of stuff, and it's very unfair. So what do we do in a moment like that when the human system is broken? Well, I certainly want to be able to have a clean heart that can go into the throne room of God and get the judge, the one righteous judge, to be at work in this situation. Therefore, I don't want to put up a roadblock. And he hasn't given me or you or anybody else as a civilian the sword of justice. Not yet. At some point, as this thing devolves and falls apart, then there may well be an assignment to do that. But I'm not going to go there quickly. And I'm going to only do that when I know that that's clearly directed as someone says, will you, and you will take up that responsibility. And to do that, you can't be doing your vengeance thing.
No,
I mean, that just will completely pervert everything. And I do think, you know, when we look at the world right now and our situation, the thing that God's been impressing upon me is the whole bit of the forgotten sovereign. That is we, the people.
Oh, well said. Absolutely.
The highest authority in the land that's human is we, the people, in this nation of America. Governments are then established to protect and serve those God-given rights. And we have abandoned our post in mass, collectively, not everyone, but in mass, we the people have forgotten that they are the sovereign. They have a job to do. They're not on the welfare end of the government dole. A lot of people are putting themselves there. But, I mean, Benjamin Franklin, when the lady said, you know, what kind of government did we get? He said, a republic, ma'am, if you can keep it. We haven't done the keeping part.
No, we haven't.
And so we don't really get to point fingers and complain, because if you've done your job, then you can look at the guy that hasn't done his. But I don't think the collective, we the people, have done our job. We're supposed to keep the government in check. We're supposed to be that check and balance. When we first had courts, we were citizen jurors. We did, you know, we take jury duty, we throw the trash, and we try to get out of it. They sat in courts, they sat and they were presiding as citizen jurors. They were looking at the proceedings and they were watching the judge, they were watching the lawyers, they were listening to the law, they were weighing the law, and they were listening to all the circumstances. And their job was to raise a flag whenever there was something that was out of order. If the judge was out of order, they called a flag on the judge. If the law was wrong, they would change the law so that justice wouldn't be perverted. If a lawyer, and it's like, where are those people? We're supposed to be those people. Those were courts of justice. And they basically had, they established literacy laws in this land. Because they said, you cannot be effectively a part of this if you're not illumined with the light of truth. Therefore, they mandated, wherever there are more than 50 homes, that they had to establish a public school for the teaching of the Bible. That's what they set up. Not because everyone had to be a Christian, but they said, all of our jurisprudence flows from that book. We need to understand it. We need the light of truth on it. They didn't want to go through the dark ages again, where all kinds of mayhem and millions of people were killed because they didn't know the truth. They called it the old deluder Satan law. I mean, it doesn't get more obvious than that. The only way we're going to do this is to righteously understand our foundations and then do our darn job.
And this is not an easy path, because we have this expanded and overreaching of federal. We have so much of our society has been framed around it, and to try to navigate through it's tough. This is why, you know, you and I have talked extensively about the importance of resetting at the county level with the sheriff, which is the proper authority, and then restructuring this through the will of the people. It has to be like this. This is the only way we're going to get this back, because as we try to reach and worry about the elections of a governor or the elections of a senator or the elections of a president, all of that's like throwing apples like down the street and hoping that some kid picks them up and makes a pie.
Yeah, I had a 2-hour conversation with a friend this morning that is intimately involved in the whole election process down in Arizona and the utter perversion of what's happening in Arizona. I mean, it's like, excuse me. If Florida with a hurricane can count their votes, and you really somehow with a far less population can't count yours, And the person was like, what do we do? And I said, you know, the procedures, the law and procedures, the guy who has the most authority than anybody else is the sheriff of your county. Has anyone gone to him and registered their complaint and said, you need to take charge of this election and make sure that it's right? Has anyone done that? No one has done that yet. Someone needs to do that. And then it needs to be looked into. He has the right, the jurisdiction. See, because if we act in just rebellion, or we just grab our pitchforks and we just ignite our torches, you know, we can do our protests. But the truth is if it's not done appropriately, you don't get heaven's justice as the wind on your backside. And it's like there's a right way that's been set up. I marvel at the founders that they were able to put the things in place that they did, because they were really writing out some foundational truths, because they were tired of all the ways it had been messed up. They really found some great secret sauce, not perfect, but it's amazing. And there is a blueprint for us to follow. You know, we're all bummed because no one seems to follow it. And it's like, well, then as the forgotten sovereign, maybe take your role and stand up and say, excuse me, this still governs, this still rules. And if after a long list of grievances, and we've addressed them, if after that, they have not complied and not rectified the situation, then we come to the duty part of the Declaration of Independence.
It's a really interesting thing you just said. I'm going to see, I had the Declaration of Independence up, and I just want to read this, because it's right there in the first paragraph, what you just said. And it's in the unanimous declaration of the 13 United States of America, when in the course of human events, it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with one another, and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and nature's God entitle them. Here it comes. A decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to the separation. It's right there. It's right. And that's biblical, right to the letter.
Yeah. I don't know if you interviewed this guy or you met him in Missouri, but there's a group in California that actually has walked through this process. They spent the last year and a half, and they have been listing and declaring in front of the Capitol in Sacramento, out loud, declaring the grievances. They have been, you know, it's like in the day of Martin Luther, when he tacked up his little 90, you know, his thesis, 95 thesis on the door of the church. Here's the grievances. And it's like when you go through the process, they have actually followed the letter of the law in the Constitution, the provisions of being able to say, hey, this is not right. We're calling a foul on the play. We're declaring it publicly. We're making it known. We're filing the briefs. And now we're appealing. And I think they've actually sent something through to Congress. You know, there's a reason we have a West Virginia as opposed to you just a Virginia. Mm-hmm. It's because they went through the process of saying, we're separating from this. We don't agree with what they're doing. And we're going to establish and cut out and carve out our own state, because we don't want to be bound by the way these guys are doing things. So they went through a process of separation. I think we're here in our country today where it's like, that's the rightful place of the next step. It isn't load your gun and get your kid on. It is like, wait a minute, there's still a process. Have we identified the grievances that are bringing us to this place? And I know there are places and peoples that have, and they've been doing this. And so, I mean, that to me is the great news, is this nation is not entirely asleep. There's many people that do get this. And we've got to learn to come together and say, not in this county, not in that county. Right. We're not going to tolerate this because it's completely wrong.
Well, we just had this happen, and we're going to kind of start closing this down. But in Oregon, we just passed the election being the rigged election that we have up here. They just passed a pretty strict gun.